Now you've got them on the griddle. Just keep turning until he's done.
Letter A.
Doesn't the sense of wonder begin with awe? To tell you, in very sophisticated Mahayana Buddhism, and they were working with the magical hymns of the Prajnaparamita, they finally limited it down to a sutra and one letter, ah. Fourth century.
Is that like the beginning of the alphabet?
Right. About 300, 2400 BC.
Anyway, this is how not to do a project.
Can you leave it here and then next week we'll talk more about it?
Sure.
Because you're going to be gone for right. Writer's Conference. So, okay, let's set that up on the counter and let's have another one.
Well, before the real works of art come out here, I'm the nice star, Walter.
Have you heard this before?
I had so much trouble this week just trying to do anything, and I'm just going to bring in these little sketches that I started with, because I don't know if I'll ever complete anything in this phase. Hopefully the mask will be more. I have a beautiful set of Rembrandt artist pastels and colored pencils, and I sat down with these and...
Here, I'll take them around while you talk.
Okay. And I chose colors that attracted me and thought were harmonious together, but I also liked with good pastels the way the pigment lays on the paper. These particular colors that I chose were soft against the paper and kind of glided against the paper. There was some fluidity to them, but as I placed them together, I didn't want to have so much control over the colors that I wanted to give them some space, and I felt that the more I added to them, even of the same colors, I don't know if I can explain this that well, that there was, you know, that there was a conflict, and I was saying to myself the whole time, well, I chose these colors anyway, and, you know, there's some harmony here, but there was just so much tension, and I wanted a certain free statement that, you know, it was difficult to continue, so I just kind of left them as is. If somebody could make a comment about their own attempts at making a painting and that kind of conflict of wanting to make some kind of free statement, to let the colors, in other words, speak for themselves, but the conflict of oneself getting in the way, that's where I'd, like a comment, if possible, if anyone had that experience.
Yeah, I have one, and I was going to go with mine that I brought, that I understood more the meaning of the phrase, the execution of the work. That's what I felt I was doing as I had worked out. that double meaning really it's very frustrating to want to do something and to see what other people had done. But that was inspired by what Dolores was showing. And I didn't want to copy hers, but when I wanted to produce mine, that came to mind.
There's a phrase in the Bhagavad Gita, the mind is the slayer of the rage.
When you start getting into color, color has a way of just, as you focus on it, it expands. And then when you go to put it on something, you limit, and Then there's the inner flow, which coincides with the color. And again, that's another limit, and it's a direction. So what happens, you have that total color expansion and then the total limitation of yourself. And then, to me, the basic comment is that each color is a universe in itself, and as we get into it, how could we use one color to show a universe, and then another color as part of the dichotomy?
That exhibit at the County Museum of Georgia O'Keeffe's work, in the recording, she speaks of how she wouldn't begin, at least at the beginning, she always worked in charcoal, you know, black at first, you know, before she'd ever, and you can see, you know, how difficult it is just to get that out first before you even, you know, begin to use the color.
So in touching the colors, you're touching the universes in yourself, and how expansive you really are, and then how limited this world creates you in. Thank you.
It looks like you have an awful lot to say. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
An awful lot is being said. That's what you were saying. That's the next to say, but you know how to put it there.
Yeah, it's to the stage of the spectacle.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't come through the deep self yet to be attained, but the petroglyphs are there. You do it, what you think? Whose is that? Leaning against the wall. Is that anonymous?
Yes, it's anonymous self.
No more poop than I can fly a space shuttle.
There you are.
I wanted to do that.
Chain of life.
What of life?
Chain of life. Question.
Mirror. Yeah, it's like that chain of life is not the old-fashioned image of like a chain, but it's like if you look at contemporary microbiological smear with all of the various DNA levels, it comes out more like this than a chain. This is what you would see if you went to UCLA and went to a microbiological lab, and you're going to have a cross-section of life now, any life form, on the DNA level, that's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
There's no chain in there. So if you're thinking that you're going to pull yourself along link by link, that's not only out of date, that's a fantasy. That never was. This really was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, he's saying, on Walter's painting, Gene said it looked like a Milky Way of letters and colors and numbers and so forth. And this is like a microbiological form of the Milky Way. It's the Milky Way of the whole rainbow of life.
That's very flattering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's
how much is it?
It's quite close. It's supposed to represent a process from a thought to another thought. All my life I've been accused of being too logical, too analytical, not creative enough. And I always thought that those people are wrong, they just don't understand exactly what it is that the thought process is. When you think one thought and 3 minutes later, you have an entirely different thought. There are a whole series, a sequence of events, a series of thoughts that lead from the first one to the last one. And they sort of connect discontinuously, but sort of continuously. So I took each successive color and incorporated it somewhat into the color both preceding and succeeding. So each block, and there are blocks there, I used pen and ink and made a block to represent a single thing. Each block, the color that's in it, is partly contributed to by the one before it and the one after it, but it is its own unique color all the time. Sort of like thought. You go from one thought to another. Each one contributes successively down the line. But each is an individual, kind of separate by itself. So there's a linkage from color to color, but there's a discontinuity in the physical separation. It's a thought process. So I had to give it a name. What do you think?
Like the above is.
See how they group, and then there's a articulation, then they group, and there's an articulation. Mm-hmm. So that grouping and that articulation like that, in yoga, a moment of thought is called a chitta. Not a chitta that runs, but the C-H-I-T-T-A, chitta. Every chitta has 16 parts. The atom of thought has 16 parts. Only the first eight are differentiable. The last eight occur as a trill all together. So that they are never distinct, but there's always a sense of movement. That's why thought is not only analytically exact, but also is a movement. Every moment of thought has an undertone of movement and then an eight-part structure. Every single moment of thought. So thought as itself has its characteristics. It's not only differentiation, but it's in movement at the same time. And so you bring this up. In the high Middle Ages at Oxford University, when Robert Grosseteste and Roger Bacon were first really bringing intelligence back into its full form, Grosseteste had a wonderful statement. He said that at the end of a rainstorm, the sun is shining on it. When you see the rainbow, every water drop in the rainbow is a rainbow. That's the realization and a scientific consciousness of the truth of that matter, and it is true. Every raindrop in the rainbow is a rainbow.
And so this is quite accurate about that. Was this was the top that you had originally, is that right?
Like no, this? He had it the other one.
Was this? Well, this is his signature here.
Oh, you mean that's how I did. Well, it doesn't have any specific way that it goes, but I ended up putting the right.
The way he had it was he had like the bottom up on top.
Like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, it started out the other way.
I think that was so great about it because in your blood, and if you see a true, if you go for $50, you can have a live blood sample and you see it, you know, on this little screen. There is no beginning and there is no end, and that's what it looks like, it's beginning, ending, you know, because you don't have it closed off. And there's your thought.
Specific intent.
So, yeah, fix it up. Oh, great.
I intended for it not to be closed. At either end, also each block is, well, there is a block in there, the colors bleed over the sides. And so the colors inside the block.
So you could give him an alternate title, The Blood of Thought.
So next I'm going to apply for a job.
Yeah, the Blood of Blood.
How about somebody who's in the back of the room? How does it look from that perspective, from that distance?
The color has a lot of movement. There's a flow. And it's almost like a river of thought.
Let's try something else. Ed, when you look at it, where does your eye first go? What part of it?
I think the largest grouping, which is the orange yellowish one, in the upper left.
And where does it move from there? Does it go up or down?
Connected.
Look, as you're looking, what? How are you looking? Look for your first look, and where does your eye move to? You're not talking about an idea of it, you're just describing the activity as it goes on. Narrate your eye as it sees it. You see the grouping of the yellow, red, and then where does your eye move to?
Bottom right bend there.
It goes down to the corollary. The same colors further down. And then how does it move?
Well, to the bottom.
Right.
And then up to the straight up from the bottom, and that string between the grouping on the right and the grouping on the left.
If some of you are having trouble following this, Kandinsky's book, or the book on Kandinsky, The Language of the Eye, or Rudolf Arnheim's Visual Thinking, will help you to be able to say what your eye is doing. The first thing in appreciation, in aesthetics, is to be conscious of how your eye moves. That's all. You can't start with your mind. You have to start with how does your eye move? Or sometimes in sculpture, how does your hand move? How does the sense of touch move? There are Eskimo sculptures that fit in the palm of the hand, and you can only experience out of sight, in the pocket, in the parka or somewhere. And it's the movement of the thumb. And a good Eskimo sculpture is one that the thumb never gets tired of moving in. It's an endless knot of movement of the thumb. And for the Inuit, that's a fine sculpture. Because when night is 6 months long, you gotta have something. And you don't want something that's gonna wear out or get worn. In other words, aesthetic sense is has something to do with your social environment, It has nothing to do with your deep self, but it has a lot to do with a kind of a relationship there between you. So we're trying to educate ourselves here, not to be artists, but to be able to be human beings for whom these capacities are not going to let go. Yeah?
Go ahead, okay.
Yes.
I think you have a very loving thought. It's surrounded by peace.
Yeah, the context.
Linear, but it has that.
Where in your experience, where is that, where would that pink be encountered? That kind of a pink, like that.
Bad boy.
Yep.
See how,
a child?
Yeah, the association, see how all that
smells like it.
Garden.
Go ahead.
With me, my eye is attracted to the dark up on top, and then it flows very, very fast down the river to the end. When it's upside down, it's still attracted at the top, but it moves very slowly along the river channel. Even when you do that, the direction is still the same. When you had it upside down, it was in absolute terms, the direction is the same because of, to me, it's going up now because of the particles on the lower right there are more massive and it's being more and more inclined as you go up. That's the breaking up of coarser understandings in the finer and finer understanding.
I don't think it has an up or a down. Just like you can't really see where your thoughts go.
Thus it could be turned on its side. Just turn it on its side once, either way. Let's see.
I still get the feeling it's going to the right.
How many feel it's going to the right? How many feel it's going to the left?
I had a difference when it was straight up both ways. I went to the blank part around the yellow, it was blank. And then I went both ways. And then when he turned it up the other way, I was very happy because I went to the blank part where that deep red is, you know, in there. And then it went both ways. This way, it doesn't do that so much, but held up the other way. So was that wrong or?
No, nothing is wrong here. It's all interesting. You move to from context to context, from background to background, from pale line to pale line, from the pale yellow to the space in the larger spaces in between the red. Yeah.
And therefore it was home. So that, I mean, it went both ways. Like super.
Yeah. That motion has a feeling tone motion, and this work has almost a dead even ambivalence in feeling tone. There's no preference one way or the other. The thought preference is that Dave sees that movement towards the top or now to the right. When you think about it, thought can move in that kind of sequence. But the feeling tone is one of dispersal evenly throughout the whole surface of the work as a matrix, an open matrix. That's like the pink could very well be cotton candy. This could be a carnival of balloons. In other words, the feeling tone here is perfectly balanced and ambivalent thereby, but the thought vector here is quite definitely skewed into a certain movement in a certain direction. Very good. This is your first painting.
No, the first since I was in single digits.
All right. Anybody else bring up? Sina, you have yours with you. Let's
okay.
Get to Sina.
A couple of weeks ago, when Dolores showed us her, I was so impressed. I figured at least I better be doing something. And so I went home, and I think it was that afternoon that I got out some blank paper and just a pencil and started sketching. And as I sketched, sort of was coming out on me both the idea and how I would do it. And then as I finished one, I realized I had to do another. So it sort of developed as it went along, and it was not until more than a week later that I got the materials and went ahead and executed them. And realized is also this phrase, art for art's sake, for my own. I didn't change them too much, but I felt that this was what I wanted to do at this time. And as I was first sketching, I realized that what I was doing was showing my expression at this point of the feminine energy. As I finished the one, I realized I had to do another because this was only one side of it, so I had to do the other part of what to me was the feminine energy.
Mm-hmm. Should I put it up here or on the chair?
Will it fit up there? I think it may fit up there on that niche. Yeah. We got some digging bowl.
Yeah, that's
good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. A mind who plays life in a game of tic-tac-toe will always try to strategically fill in the center first so as to win. But a human being will always leave the center open so that the divine has a place to be and come and go as it wants. Did that paint?
Acrylic. Two years ago, I came in just at the beginning, just at this point,
right.
And I did a watercolor, and I don't
that's
know
exactly
if I brought
right.
it,
I remember
but I made
now.
Some washes of watercolor.
From here, the pink shapes feel like ears. They don't quite look like it, but they feel like ears. Feels like a whole ring of ears listening to the blue, the deep blue. Oceanic ears.
Can you name it like that?
I was going to say shells below the water.
Shell.
Or something in the sky. It can be either one. I haven't figured out yet what. And I see it as a square, as a long square. That's a rectangle. But it's also below the water and also above in the sky. I don't know what in the sky.
That footprint on the grass.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And there is the earth. It's below the water, on the earth,
How many pink objects are there?
I was trying to count them myself, and I haven't yet.
That's what I was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Carol, go ahead.
This occurred to me sometime last night because I just did it yesterday, both of them, and I thought, I wonder how many I put in.
Yes. Well, you actually put 14, but you left the one in the center out, and so the center is implicitly at 14.
Well, the shape, the pattern of them all is the shape of the individual, too.
Right? That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
The inner space here is another one of these. Whatever these are, that's one of them. That's very good. That's excellent. Very, very good.
And I call that one nurturing.
All right.
Because of the shape and the colors and
the
womb. And this is the other.
Let me get a.
Yeah, this is the other part. I did not want to leave it just as that because as I just said, by the time I finished sketching this, I realized that that wasn't all the feminine energy that I wanted to be showing at this time.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Oh.
A bit different.
Wow.
Which I haven't expressed yet.
Let me pick on somebody just for a minute. Toshi, when you look at it, just straight on, I know you've never seen it before, where does your eye go and how does it move?
It kind of hits that red,
Yeah. What happens when your eye goes up to that highlighted black line? Tornado.
Yeah.
Where does your eye go from the top? How does it get back down? What does it see that brings it back down? Or does it just go off? The strokes of the hole. The hole makes it bring the eye down. In other words, the only way that our eye can get back down here, because that relationship is so domineering. The only way that this can get down here is to have kind of a gestalt sense that all these are a single motion. And that's the storm, that's the tornado. Feeling, though, is the visual perception of all of this movement is like a whirl. Because that's the only way that the rest of this works in concert with these two forms. These two forms dominate the whole thing. And if these motion strokes were not in there, the eye couldn't come down. Be ping-ponging forever between those two. That would be it. But it's only the kinesthetic cue of these motion strokes all together that gives you any kind of circulation, and it's the saving grace in the work. Where this one is wide open, this one is all set for being closed permanently. Because what would happen is that this would collapse into this, or this would be absorbed into that, one way or the other. So that storm feeling tone is cued in by the artist providing us with all these strokes. But it's not there as an idea, it's there kinesthetically. And only by analysis can we tease the idea out and see, oh, that's what's going on. Now what is the pedal doing?
That I haven't fixed on yet. I don't like destructive and what's the other, I think of controlling.
All right.
Nurturing, controlling.
Nurturing there and controlling there.
They both have I wanted to show a cyclic.
Leave this one against the black base. Leave that one there if you would. And then leave this one against the black base behind you. See, there's a black base. And just lean that against that. And then let us take this in.
I wanted to show the cyclic effect on both.
Yeah.
The only thing I did add on the second one after that I hadn't originally was the light at the top of the glass. I thought it needed that.
Exactly.
It's the source, it comes from behind, and before that it just went
right. It's backlit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a halo.
That's a redeemer. That's a redeemer up there.
Well, that's the psychic energy, you see.
Mm-hmm.
A human being is like this, but a human being with psychic energy has a nimbus, has a halo, has an aura. But
your first painting, the first thing that, when you put it up, the first thought I had was, you know, the shapes were leaves. And I, you know, that was my first thought. But, and now with this, I see, you know, I see a seasonal kind of connection between the two, you know, the two paintings. And I don't, being born in the late fall back east and having a connection to that, I don't see that that second one as, you know, so destructive, you know, necessarily, but it's just, you know, part of that season. And you know, there is that backlit quality that that brings out the life that's still going on in the decaying process. I see the second one as nurturing in its own way, as making the availability of new life possible.
I was just noticing, I sort of a noumenon or something that was occurring last time when I was watching, I was looking at Chris's paintings that I really liked, and then afterward, I was just looking at the cups on the table, one in particular, and then another one, is just, they were just striking to me as being very beautiful, suddenly, and then the flower that was on the table. And just after looking at this, you know, I'm just noticing kind of similar colors in, like, your jacket, Roger, and your tie, and also the red pillow on the chair with the brown chair. You know, that suddenly seeing the artwork and then that somehow bleeds into my perception of other things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Because this lady said feminine, I thought
Tina,
herself. And the first painting is the child or when she first started, but this is the evolved learning woman. This is one now. The second one is the evolved learning woman. But you're going round yet, you know, you're learning and evolving and coming and going. The wisdom woman would mean to me that you knew it all already. You'd be like the statue standing there, but this shows you're very vibrant.
Yeah, where this is perhaps fire and earth, that is like water and air.
Well, earthy I wanted.
Yeah.
I chose the brown.
But the two together are the four elements. They go together. In their disparateness, they're related structurally together. That's why you presented it all. The painting, that is the painting for this project, is the two of these together.
But I didn't want to make it side by
side.
Right. It was separate.
Right. Right. If you decided, and you may well do so, if you decided to get this framed and put it up, you should have at least 4 feet of space in between the two. In other words, have a huge frame with a lot of mat separating the two by at least 3 or 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that would make an interesting ensemble. And you need that kind of dimension. Notice the freedom that we have in our personal space. It's beyond artistic license. It's a personal freedom to express ourselves in the way that we need to in order to get it out accurately. Do we have any other paints?
I want to hear them. They're real short.
All right.
I'm going to be gone soon.
Okay.
I
let's bring it up.
This
seems not very important to you.
I have a hard time. Because this I did in 63 when feeling that it's dead. You know, where you
did you did it in 1963.
I'm not an artist, by the way. There was a woman that had this magical stuff you put on a canvas. And what it did, you could let your fingers talk, let your fingers just walk, and I could just play. And you never supposed to think about it. And that was easy, because I never could think about anything that much better. But I would, you just play around and all of a sudden something would come out. And I saw wonderful pictures that people did. I could not believe it. But anyway, I started and I just did it for about 3 months. And I was trying to figure out what pieces I had in mind. I'll go back for that. Wouldn't you know I couldn't find that magical quality that you could spread over a canvas and you could be free with it. I went to a lot of places and they gave me stuff. But when I tried to do it, it was the hardest job in my life, and I really worked at this. And so the painting that I brought for here was a job. That was fun. I did it in about 2 hours, and it was just playing. But I loved it afterwards because I felt it was like the arising of castles, of the soul, you know, like every man is her own castle. Or her own freedom, you know, of nobility, all that good stuff. And I just saw them coming all over. And then years later, I saw that in a dream. So I don't know if I'm first, but it's going to be one. This one, I thought, well, I'll get creative too. I'll bring out something that I won't even think about. But it didn't come. I couldn't make it just flow. You know, it was sticky. Stuff wouldn't move. It's like everybody was against me. That's all I got. But I don't know what it is or what it means. But the other was much more interesting.
Magical castle.
It's like a close-up of the first one.
I didn't know what I was
saying. And you finally arrived at the top.
Another castle in the center, the gold and brown, way up on top of a kind of a mountain, and then the green and so forth is up kind of a valley, and they're looking at it way up high from some kind of a cliff. And up where I'm folding into a beautiful little fairyland.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Carol. It's like Judy Garland and company getting to the Emerald City and all these things.
Fantasy land.
Because I looked at it, I'm aware of my of composing it as I look at it, and I just kind of want to be cheery of the way that I compose it because I mean I like it. I mean there's something, there's sort of a deserty feeling about it, and my eye sort of goes to the left bottom, and there's sort of that greenery there, that shrubbery. And then there's sort of rocks sort of peripheral to that. But I don't really want to look at the center because that's sort of, I mean, that's sort of a holiness of something. Is it a tree or is it a flame or what? But I don't want to put a label at it and I don't really want to look at it because I don't want to conceptualize it. And then by and by I sort of notice the pinkish surrounding that in the center, which has a very nice feeling to it, quality to it. The other one I also had, just that sense of a cathedral or something in the middle, which is what I first saw, you know, somehow that cathedral in stone, which is, it is man-made, but it's very natural in its quality. So then the greenish wasn't so appealing as the green in the other one, but I mean, it's just sort of vaguely suggested nature or something. But, and so I, you know, I also respond to that sense of castle, and as Jane said, I respond to the other one with a sense of, you know, prayer or something like that, with a sense of, certain sense of holiness about it or whatever.
It conveys such a beautiful memory to many people here, and I think overall that's beautiful in itself, that each person sees something that stirred them, you know, the beauty in their life, whether a flower or a castle or the Sierras in early morning when the sun's just rising have a golden quality to them, to the rocks that I've never seen anywhere. And being in at the base, it's below the trees,